So today, we're starting a new series on David. And David is one of the most well-known and well-liked characters in all of the Bible. From early on in my life, he was one of my favorites because he's named after me. So all of my names are biblical names. David Andrew Hunter. So David, obviously my parents chose that because of King David. Andrew, my middle name, Andrew was one of the 12 disciples. He was the one who he met Jesus. He said, wow, he is the Messiah. He immediately went to tell his brother, Simon, who later became known as Peter, and said, this is the Messiah. You need to come and meet him. So David, Andrew, you're probably wondering about Hunter. Where does Hunter come from in the Bible? Well, that goes way, way back early on in the story, all the way back to Genesis chapter 10. It says this, one of Cush's descendants was Nimrod, who became a heroic warrior. He was a mighty hunter in the Lord's sight. So Nimrod, the mighty hunter. So all my names are biblical names. Anyways, let's talk about David. There's a lot to cover in David's life. He was, you like that? Yeah, I thought you'd. Okay, yeah, thanks. I should have just kept my mouth shut, right? But David, there's a lot to talk about with David. He was a shepherd, he was a poet, he was a king, he was a warrior, he was a general, he was an outlaw, he was a ladies' man, he was a musician, a worship leader, a prophet, an adulterer, a murderer, and he's known as a man after God's heart. So there's a lot to say about David's life. He's one of the most central characters in all of Scripture. And just to give you some perspective, there's more space in the Bible devoted to David than to any other person. His life story is covered in 4 Old Testament books, totaling 66 chapters. And on top of that, he's mentioned 59 times in the New Testament. The largest book in the Bible, the book of Psalms, 150 chapters. David is responsible for a large portion of the book of Psalms. Many of those Psalms that we read, those are his prayers and worship songs that he wrote and sang to the Lord. So David is a very significant man in God's story of redemption, him pursuing mankind and seeking to win us back to himself. And David is a big part of that story. So today I want to begin by giving you just a little bit of background on David and his beginnings. Israel, before David arrived on the scene, would best be characterized as a nation that was distant from God, led by a king who was also distant from God. Some years before this, Israel was in a state of political and spiritual unrest. They were beginning to grow tired of worshiping a God they could not see. All the nations around them had 2 things that Israel didn't have. First of all the nations around them had kings. So there was somebody tangible who was in authority, who was the leader, who was calling the shots that they could see and talk to and hear from. And Israel didn't have a king, and they desperately wanted one. And on top of that, Israel is worshiping a God that they had heard from, but they couldn't see. There wasn't a physical, tangible presence of the living God, but all the nations around them, they had these false gods they worshiped, and they built idols and statues that they could see and touch and bow down to and offer sacrifices to. And Israel was beginning to grow tired of not having anything physical they could look to as a source of authority. And so they began to demand a king, and they said, we want a king just like all the nations around us. Everyone else has a king. Why can't we have a king? And the prophets stepped forward and they warned Israel against this. They said, you don't want a king. Because if you have a king, here's what he's going to do. He's going to levy taxes against you. He's going to drag your sons into military service. He's going to build an army. He's going to build a palace. He's going to take some of your horses and some of your land and some of your possessions to build up his kingdom. You don't want a king because a king is most likely to treat you very unfairly. But they continued to persist, and they said, we want a king, we want a king, and they continued to complain. And so God finally says to them, okay, you want a king, here's your king. And Saul was chosen to be the first king of Israel. Now for a time, Saul looked pretty good. 1 Samuel 9:2 describes him in this way. It says, he was an impressive young man without equal. So he's described as impressive and without equal. In other words, there's something unique about him. There's something different about him that made him stand out among everyone else. And then on top of that, verse 2 concludes by saying, and he stood a head taller than all the others. So he was a tall guy. So apparently being tall qualifies you to be king. So Saul was chosen to be the first king, and he looked like a leader. He seemed to be like, this guy has a lot of potential. He's going to be a great king. And initially, he was very timid, but then once he stepped into the role, he kind of had a commanding presence. And he did some things very well. He did make some good decisions. But there was a major flaw in King Saul, and the major flaw was this. Saul was not a man after God's heart. Saul was not a man who loved God. Saul was a man who loved popularity. Instead of being a God pleaser, Saul was a people pleaser. And kind of the guiding principle for him, the driving force behind his decisions and behind his leadership was not the question of what does God say about this? What's God's plan for this situation? What does God want to accomplish here? What is God saying about this? That was not the driving force. The driving force behind Saul was, what do the polls say? What do the people want me to do? What's going to win me popularity and favor with the people? And that was the driving force behind the decisions he made. And so it didn't take long before he began to compromise and disobey and rebel against God just to prop himself up. And very soon, his leadership was in great jeopardy. And so in 1 Samuel 13, the prophet Samuel comes to Saul and says, Saul, your days as king are numbered. You need to turn things around. You need to repent. You need to start following what God says instead of just doing your own thing. And Saul, instead of listening to God's prophet, instead of turning things around and repenting, Saul doubles down and he continues to disobey and to rebel against God. And then two chapters later, Samuel comes to Saul once again and confronts him once again and kind of gives him the final warning. And he says this in chapter 15. He says, because you have rejected the command of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. Now, there's a warning in that for all of us. Because if you look at Saul's life, like I said, early on, he did do some things right. And the Bible tells us that God had his anointing upon Saul. He favored him. He blessed him. He empowered him to be a great leader. And God had a plan and a purpose for Saul. There were great things he had in store for him. And yet Saul rebelled against God, turned his back on him, refused to listen to his voice. And as a result, he missed out on all of that. And the tragedy is that the same thing can happen to you and to me. Because God has plans for us, for every one of us. God has a calling for you. There are things he wants to do in your life that are far beyond anything you can imagine or accomplish in your own strength. God has great things in store for you. And yet, just like Saul, it's possible for us to destroy all of that by rebelling against God, by disobeying him. It's possible for us to abandon all of that by pursuing the wrong priorities and placing other things above him when it comes to the authority in our lives. And as a result of that, to miss out on God's best for us. And so we come to this point in Saul's life where in chapter 16, verse 14, it says this, now the Spirit of the Lord had left Saul. That's a very sad verse. Because here's a man that God placed his spirit upon. Here's a man that God empowered to be a great leader. But because he turned his back on God so many times, over and over and over again, it got to the point where God said, I am withdrawing my hand of blessing. I am withdrawing my empowering because he is not using the role and the authority I gave him to honor me. He's using it to serve himself instead. And this is where David comes into the picture. Because the Bible tells us that God had a plan and a purpose that Saul was not willing to fill. And so David was chosen to fill that role. And so take a look at this verse in 1 Samuel 3, 14. It says, again, this is Samuel speaking to Saul, and he says this. He says, now your kingdom must end, for the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. That's why David was chosen by God to be king. Because before he was chosen, while he was still a shepherd, while he was still a nobody, God saw something in this man's heart. And he said, this is a man who loves God. This is a man who values what God values, who hates what God hates, who wants to pursue what God is saying to pursue. David was a man after God's heart. And one of the questions for us to ask is, what am I after? When I look at my life and what I value and what's important to me and how I invest my life, can I truly say that I am a person after the heart of God? And does my life really bear that out? There's another verse in the Old Testament, 2 Chronicles 16. Look at this in verse 9. It says, the eyes of the Lord search the whole earth in order to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. It says that God is looking, God is searching for someone whose heart is fully committed to him. And his promise is he will strengthen that person. And so the promise for you and for me is this, that God is looking for someone. God is looking for people, for men and women who will abandon everything else to serve him. He's looking, he is ready to bless, he's ready to pour out his spirit, he's ready to empower and to fill and to anoint and to give favor to those who will follow his lead. And we have to examine our hearts and ask, am I that person? Am I someone like David who is after God's heart, because God is still searching for those people because he wants to do great things in our day, in our time? And if we are willing to be people who are after the heart of God, willing to be people whose hearts are fully committed to him, then he will draw us into that mission and he will empower us to bring it to pass. Saul was not willing to be that person. And so we come to the end of chapter 15 in 1 Samuel 15, and Samuel is grieving for Saul. He had invested a lot in this man, trying to help him follow God, trying to help him do the right thing. And as I said, Saul kept turning away and rebelling against God. And now Samuel is grieving for him because he knows that his kingdom will come to an end. And we come to chapter 16 and God says, enough of that. It's time to move on. I've chosen someone else to be the king. And so God instructs Samuel to go to the town of Bethlehem. And he says, I want you to go to the home of a man named Jesse, because one of his sons is the person that I've chosen to be the next king. So God tells Samuel to go to this town of Bethlehem and find the house of Jesse, and God will show him which of his sons to anoint as king. Now, Samuel is afraid. Why is he afraid? Because this is treason, right? Like, to go and anoint another man as king while there is a king sitting on the throne in the palace, that's treason. So Samuel is afraid of what's going to happen to him. That's a good way to lose your head. And he says, okay, God, if that's what you're telling me to do, I'll do it. And so he goes to Bethlehem. And when he arrives in town, now the leaders of the town, the elders of the town, now they're afraid when Samuel shows up. Everybody's afraid in this story. They come out to him and they're like, what are you doing here, Samuel? Why are you here? And the reason they're afraid is because a prophet has just come into their town. And when prophets showed up, like, I don't know how much of the Old Testament you've read, but when prophets showed up, usually it wasn't to bring good news. Usually when prophets showed up, like, there's, you know, earthquakes and rivers of blood in the streets and famine and hordes of locusts and really bad things happening. And so they're kind of frightened of, okay, what's going on? Why are you here? And Samuel says, settle down. It's okay. I'm here because God has said that in this town, in the house of Jesse, he has chosen the person to replace Saul as king. And so they take him to Jesse's home, and he tells Jesse what's going on. He says, I want to see your sons. And so Jesse begins this parade. He brings out his sons for Samuel to meet. And we jump down to verse 6 in 1 Samuel 16. Let me just read a couple verses here. When they arrived, verses 6 and 7, when they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab. This is the first son, the oldest son that Jesse brings out. Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, surely this is the Lord's anointed. So Samuel takes one look at this guy and says, oh, he's got to be the guy. This must be the right one. This must be God's chosen. But then God speaks to Samuel and says, don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. How did Samuel describe the one God had chosen to replace Saul as king? He's a man who's after the heart of God. The verse in 2 Chronicles we looked at says that God is looking for those whose hearts are fully committed to him. You see, God looks at what's inside. It's easy for us to fool ourselves. It's easy for us to fool other people, but God knows what's really going on in our hearts, and that's what he's looking at. And it's interesting what Samuel is doing, the mistake he's falling into here, because again, Saul, initially, he looked good. He's a big guy. He's a tall guy. He had this commanding presence, and everybody thought he's going to be a great king, but there was something wrong with his heart. And now Samuel's falling into the same trap. He takes one look at the oldest son, and he's a big guy, and he's like, yeah, this has to be the king. And God says, no, you're looking at this completely wrong. I don't look at what's on the outside. I'm looking at the heart, and this is not the right one. And so the next several verses tell us that Jesse brings out all of his other sons. One by one, they come out, and Samuel looks at them, and God says, no, he is not the one. And they come to the last one, and God says, no, he is not the one. And Samuel's kind of confused by this. He's like, well, God told me that it would be one of Jesse's sons, and none of them is the right one. So God, what's going on? And so Samuel asks Jesse this question, verse 11. And Samuel asks, are these all the sons you have? Well, they're still the youngest, Jesse replied, but he's out in the fields watching the sheep and goats. And Samuel says, send for him at once. We will not sit down to eat until he arrives. I think it's interesting that Jesse didn't even consider the youngest son as the possible replacement for the king. He already had his mindset, it's got to be one of these. It can't possibly be David. And when he says they're still the youngest, that word youngest, the word that's used there, it suggests more than just age. It suggests someone who is overlooked and someone who is seen as unimportant. Oh, he's just a shepherd. He's out in the fields. You really want to see him? And I think it's interesting how often we overlook the people God has chosen to use in our lives, because they don't fit what we expect God is going to do. And how often we overlook the circumstances that God is going to use in our lives, because it's not the way we think God is going to work in our lives. And I think sometimes we miss out on what God is up to because we judge people, we judge circumstances through our own lens instead of listening to the voice of God. And sometimes God has a way of using the most unlikely people and the most unlikely circumstances to do his great work in our lives. Sometimes it's that person we never would have expected, that we have a conversation with them and everything changes. Or it's that person we least wanted to talk to, or we least wanted to run into, that person that maybe we avoid. But God uses that person to challenge us or to teach us something or to stretch us in some way. God has a way of getting past all of our expectations and doing things in his way and in his time. But if we're judging based on outward appearance, based on our own experience, instead of what is God saying about the heart of this person or the heart of this situation, that's when we can really key into what God is up to. And so Samuel says, we are not going to sit down to eat until I meet this last son. And so they send for David, and here's where we pick up the story. So Jesse sent for him. He was dark and handsome with beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, this is the one, anoint him. And so as David stood there among his brothers, think about that. All of his older brothers who God had rejected and said, they are not the one. David is there with them. And as David stood there, Samuel took the flask of olive oil he had brought and anointed David with the oil. And the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David from that day on. And then Samuel returned to Ramah. God anointed David. God's Spirit came upon him in a powerful way, and David has now been anointed as king. Now, that was the introduction. I've got 6 points. No, I'm just kidding. Just one. I just want to focus on one point from this part of David's story that challenges me and that I hope will challenge you. And here it is. In chapter 13, the passage we just read, that's chapter 13, Samuel anoints David as king. Now, audience feedback time. If someone came to you and you knew that they were speaking on God's behalf and they said, God has chosen you to be the king, God has chosen you to be the leader of your nation, you are the person God has handpicked to be in charge, what would you do next? You'd probably freak out.
You must be mistaken.
Huh?
You must be mistaken.
What if you believed it? What if you were like, okay, what would you do next? You're the king. What's that?
Pray.
You would pray. Yeah, absolutely.
Call your brother and say, see, told you.
In your face. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Would you do anything to start taking authority and leadership? Like, wouldn't you go to the palace and say, hey, I'm here. Right? Or maybe go to King's R Us and get fitted for a crown. You know, go out and buy a robe, get new business cards. Hi, I'm David, King-elect, right? Like, we would do something, wouldn't we? We would take some kind of action to begin to step into that role. So this is chapter 13. David is anointed king. Now, we jump ahead to chapter 16. If you remember, I said a couple minutes ago, in chapter 16, it says that God removed his spirit from Saul. Saul had so turned his back on God, God said, he is not going to turn around. He's not going to follow me. He is not going to repent. Not only does that verse say that God removed his spirit, the part we didn't read is that also says God sent an evil spirit to torment Saul. And so now Saul, not only is he in rebellion against God, now he is demon possessed. And he is beginning this descent into madness. So his advisors are, they're kind of worried. They're like, okay, we've got this demon-possessed king who's in charge of our nation. Ideas, anybody? What are we going to do about this? How can we protect ourselves? Because this is going to be really bad. And so one of them, right. So one of them steps forward and says, well, I've heard about this kid who is a shepherd, and he's also a musician. And there's something unique about him. Like, God's spirit is on him, and maybe if he comes and plays some of his music for Saul, that will kind of calm him down. And so they send for David, and David comes in, and he begins to play some worship songs in Saul's presence. Maybe some of the Psalms that you and I have read in the scriptures. And as he worships and praises God, the evil spirit cannot stand to be in the presence of worship, and so the spirit flees, and Saul has peace. This happens a few times. At some point, the spirit returns and torments Saul. They call for David again. He comes back, begins to worship. The spirit flees, and Saul has peace again. So David begins to take on a very important role in Saul's life. Now, here's what's important. Here's the point I want to get to. David is anointed king in chapter 13. In chapter 16, they send for him to come to the palace to play music. Do you know where David was when they sent for him? Do you know what he was doing? He was still out in the fields watching sheep. Here's a guy who has been anointed king. He knows that he has been handpicked by God to be the king. And yet he goes back and continues to do what he had been doing day after day when he was a nobody, when he was the youngest, the one who was overlooked and not seen as important. In other words, David is not trying to push his own agenda forward here. David is not trying to force something to happen. He knows that he's king, but he doesn't then say, okay, Samuel, you've anointed me as king. That's great. I don't need to do this stupid job anymore because God has bigger things for me, so let's go to the palace. He doesn't do that. He remained faithful where he was. Instead of trying to push forward, like God says, David, you're going to be king. And David says, okay. And he realized, I understand that the time for me to actually be the king is not here yet. And so I'm going to keep doing what God has called me to do. I'm going to be faithful with the little things until God opens the door to the next chapter in my life. And the point is this, when God says to you, when God says to me, I have chosen you, I'm going to do something amazing in your life. I've got this great plan for you. I'm going to empower you. This is going to be life-changing. When God says that to us, understand he has the ability in his way and in his time to take us off of the hillside and put us in the palace. But we're in big trouble, and we set ourselves up for failure when we try to grab the crown for ourselves, while God still has work for us among the sheep. I like the way Rick Warren puts it in his book, The Purpose-Driven Life. He says this, great opportunities often disguise themselves in small tasks. The little things in life determine the big things. So don't look for great tasks to do for God. Just do the not so great stuff, and God will assign you whatever he has in store for you. Before attempting the extraordinary, try serving first in ordinary ways. David was willing to continue serving in ordinary ways until the timing was right for him to step into the extraordinary. So a couple of questions I think are important for us to ask. The first one is this: am I faithful with the little things? Am I responsible? Am I faithful with the task at hand, with what God has called me to right now? Am I doing it well? Am I serving him well? Am I following him where he has me right now? And the reason that's an important question is because it's so easy for us to get so focused on what's ahead, to get so focused on, okay, I've got this dream in my heart. I've got this goal. I've got this plan. I've got this promise that is happening someday, and I can't wait for it to happen. And it's possible for us to get so focused on what could happen someday, we completely miss out on what God is doing today. And it's important for us to stay faithful in the moment and not to say, okay, well, one day when that happens, that's when I'll get things lined up. That's when I'll be responsible. That's when I'll give it my best, but not right now. No, that is the wrong attitude. If we have the attitude of, well, God's got bigger things in store for me, so I don't need to do this petty stuff, then we're missing the point. There's a parable Jesus tells in Matthew chapter 25. And without getting into the whole story, the conclusion of it gives us a very important truth. There was a person who was faithful and did what God had commanded him to do, and God had assigned him a very small task. And instead of saying, well, this is unimportant, this is no big deal, the person said, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it well, I'm going to do it with wisdom. And here was the master's response to him in Matthew 25, 21. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. You see, God says if we're faithful in the little things, we can be trusted with the bigger things. So if God has given you a promise of something that is yet to come, if God has put a dream in your heart of something that has not yet been realized, be faithful where you are right now. Don't focus all of your energies and expectations on what is far off. Don't focus all of your energies and expectations on someday, and I don't need to worry about this because God's going to pull me out of this and do this. No, be faithful where you are and do your best there. Because before God gives us the scepter, usually he first gives us the staff. So that's the first question. Am I faithful with the little things? The second question is this: am I trusting God's timing? I think timing is one of the hardest things for us to trust God with, isn't it? It's hard for us because things tend to take longer than we want them to. And that's a difficult issue for us. And trust really is the issue. Because if I'm pushing things, if I'm trying to force something to happen, if I'm rushing ahead of God's timing, rushing ahead of his agenda, then it means that I don't really trust him to take care of things in the right way and in the right time. At some point after David's reign, there was a psalm that was written that mentions him a couple of times. It's written by a man named Asaph, and it's Psalm 78. We're just going to look at a couple of verses because they mention David, and I think it's significant what Asaph says here. Take a look, verses 70 and 71. He chose his servant David, calling him from the sheep pens. He took David from tending the ewes and lambs and made him the shepherd of Jacob's descendants, God's own people Israel. So this is Asaph looking back on David's life and saying, God chose David. Who chose David? God did. David didn't choose that himself. God chose him. And he says that God took David from caring for the sheep and put him into the palace to care for the people. Who did that? God did that. David didn't force that to happen. God did that. In other words, David was willing to wait on God's timing because there was a timing issue. From the time that Samuel anointed David as king and said, you will be the next king of Israel, from that time until the time David stepped into that role and put on the crown and became the king, there were several years in between that time. That time of waiting was important because it built within David certain character qualities that prepared him to step into that role, that prepared him to be king. And he would have missed out on all of that if he had pushed ahead and tried to rush ahead of God's timing. Like in that moment when Samuel anoints him as king, if David had said, okay, this is great, let's gather an army, let's go overthrow King Saul because he is a wicked king, he's an evil man, so we're going to take over. God has called me to be the king, so let's go. If he had done that, he would have missed out on the work God was doing in his heart to prepare him to step into that role. And so Asaph, looking back on this, says, God chose David. And God was the one who moved him from this place to this place. David didn't force it. He waited and he trusted God's timing. And then he says this in verse 72. Look at this. Once he became king, he says this. He cared for them with a true heart and led them with skillful hands. David cared for them with a true heart. Another translation says with a heart of integrity and led them with skillful hands. How did that happen? David is known in Israel's history as one of the greatest kings, if not the greatest king in all of Israel's history. How did that happen? How did he learn to have a heart of integrity? How did he learn to lead a nation with skillful hands? How did that happen? It happened because he was willing to wait and to trust God's timing. Because it was in those years of waiting and trusting that God built within him the character qualities necessary for him to be a great king. So here's the deal. Here's what this means for you and for me. God has a plan for you. God has a purpose in mind for you. There's something amazing he wants to do in your life, and there's something amazing he wants to do through your life. He wants to empower you. He wants to anoint you. He wants to bless you. He wants to do incredible, life-changing things through you. But it might take some time before you see that actually happen. In the meantime, be faithful in the little things. Be faithful with what he has for you right now, because that is what he's using to prepare you for the bigger things. And as you do, as you are faithful in those little things, trust his timing. We've got so many examples in the scriptures of people who had to trust God's timing before the bigger things took place. Abraham was promised a son, but it took 25 years for that promise to be fulfilled, but it was fulfilled. Joseph was a young man who God gave a dream and said, you are going to be in a position of power and influence and authority. And Joseph went through years of being a slave and then being a prisoner before any of that came true. But he was faithful during that time, and he was an honorable man, and he served God well during that time of waiting. And as a result, the day came when he became the second in command in Egypt. And as a result of his wisdom, millions of people were saved from starvation. Moses is another example. Here's a guy who spent 40 years in the middle of nowhere, kind of a loner, until God brought him back into Egypt and he stood before Pharaoh and said, let my people go. Jesus himself, think about it. He was born in a feed trough and he spent the first 30 years of his life in obscurity in a tiny village on the shores of Galilee, until the day he stepped forward and said, the kingdom of God is at hand. You see, there's almost always a period of waiting. There's almost always a time between the promise and the fulfillment of that promise. And that time, that waiting, it is part of the process that God uses to develop us, to deepen us, to strengthen us. Again, God looks at the heart. We can fake the outside, but we can't fake the heart. And that time of waiting and trusting, that's when the work in the heart can be done. So if you're in that place in between the promise and the fulfillment, if you're in that place in between God has said this is going to happen, but I don't see any evidence yet that it's going to happen. If you are in that place and it's a difficult place, I encourage you to embrace it and to learn from it and to grow in it. And to listen for what God is saying to you during this time. because God has something for you. But first, he wants to do something in you.